With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach us at the show by emailing us at championshiproundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Ollie Wright. I write the Derby County blog. We're at Derby County blog on Twitter, and I'm not very happy today.
Hi, everyone. My name's Thomas. I write for wolvesblog.com. I'm very happy today, and looking forward to having a chat.
I'm Scott. I write for wearebrighton.com, which means I'm a Brighton fan, and I am very, very happy today.
Yeah, and I'm obviously not happy after Newcastle lost to Huddersfield, but yeah, thanks so much for joining us today, guys. And we'll just start with making rounds where each of us will have a few minutes to discuss what's been going on at our clubs recently. Ollie, we'll start with you. Obviously a disappointing loss against Barnsley this weekend. How are you feeling about Derby County this season, and what are your thoughts about yesterday's game?
Well, yeah, obviously, yesterday we were very poor. I think throughout the 90, we probably had one decent spell towards the end of the first half where we sort of started to look like we might be starting to click. Other than that, very, very disappointed. I mean, we sort of went in at 1-0 down, and then we conceded right after the interval, which kind of, and that just seemed to, that sort of gave Barnsley the cushion they needed to just sit in and just defend what they got, and we couldn't break them down. And it's not new, you know, for teams playing Derby to sit in and play us on the counter, even if they're at home. We're quite used to that now. But I'm certainly used to us showing a lot more invention than that. So it felt like a real step backwards. One of the main talking points for Derby fans this season has been the fact that Pearson has changed the starting formation. Obviously, as a Newcastle fan, Jake, you probably won't have been watching the Championship too much, but the other guys will know that Derby have played almost every single game a 4-3-3 for like the last three seasons now, with Chris Martin as the point of the attack. And Pearson's come straight in and changed that to a more of a sort of 4-4-1-1 sort of shape, with Darren Bent up front, Tom Ince playing behind him, and then Nick Blackman playing on the wing. And I guess Pearson's argument would be that it's, you know, we've done reasonably well in the last few years, but it hasn't worked in terms of the goal was promotion. So we haven't got over the line. We've fallen short in each of those three seasons. So perhaps it's time to change it a little bit. And maybe also just, you know, kind of putting the word out to Martin and one or two other players that they're not guaranteed a place. You know, we might play a different way. So very disappointing on Saturday. The first game of the season, we played Brighton. I'm sure that Scott will have a few words to say about that game as well. I thought we played reasonably well. It was the opening day to play Brighton was a really tough assignment, I thought. So I was pleased that we sort of gave a reasonable account of ourselves and got a point. A few concerns. The main concern, I suppose, is that we've played three games and only scored one goal, which is, you know, given that we've been one of the Championship's top scorers for the last three seasons, that's a sort of bit of a worry. But it's far too early to panic. It's just that there's obviously a lot to work on and improve.
Yeah, you touched on Nigel Pearson there. When he was appointed, I did think it was a bit of a weird one because I didn't think the squad at Derby suited him as a manager. So I know it's completely it's very early in the season, but do you think that might be a problem going forward and that he might not be able to get the best out of this squad?
A lot of people, a lot of Derby fans were absolutely elated when we appointed Pearson, and they sort of perceived him as a kind of a sort of tough operator who would, you know, one guy said crack heads, so just quite a sort of almost like a violent analogy, but like, you know, the idea being that he would sort them out, so to speak, and you know, get them playing and make sure they were disciplined and that sort of thing. He comes at football maybe from a very different angle than someone like Steve McLaren did, who was more, you know, the McLaren sort of, it was the McLaren template that we've been using, and obviously now Pearson's completely shifted away from that. So it remains to be seen. He's not made any signings yet. He's been reasonably complimentary in what he said about the current squad. He feels like they're a talented bunch of players, which they undoubtedly are. It's going to take a while. I would be shocked if Chris Martin didn't start again on Tuesday, given that, you know, we've sort of struggled to string much together in terms of creating clear cut chances. Yeah, he is a very different sort of manager than either McLaren was or Paul Clement was. So he's gonna have to affect change. He might need to let one or two go. He might need to recruit a couple. But he's taken his time over that. He's not rushed in and sort of gone, right, you know, I'm going to bring in my own players straight away. He's given the guys that we've got here already the opportunity to see if they can play his way. I quite liked the 4-3-3 shape personally, and I like playing with a sort of controlling holding midfielder, especially when we have George Thorne fit. It'll be interesting to see what happens when George is back, because he was a real sort of, he was almost like designed for that formation, and without that holding player, you can be quite, you can get counter-attack quite easily, I find it, I think. Whereas with the 4-3-3, we had a bit more solidity. It's a little bit too early to make snap judgments, but there's a lot, he's got a lot to, well, he could really use a win on Tuesday, put it that way.
I just wanted to ask you, Ollie, what you thought about Chris Martin possibly coming to Wolves. We had a bid knocked back in the week, and there's quite a lot of talk that we're going to be going back in for him.
Is that right?
Yeah, what do you, because we apparently bid somewhere between 5 and 6 million last week, depending on who you believe, and we might be going as high as 8 million to try and get him.
Right.
So I just wondered, A, what if you think he's worth that kind of money, and also what would be your reaction if, you know, you turn on the TV and he's holding a Wolves shirt in a week or two?
I don't think it'll happen, to be honest, mate. I don't see us selling, simply because it's perfectly possible that Wolves obviously didn't have a great season last year, but with all the craziness that's going on there with Mendes and everything, it's perfectly conceivable that, you know, with the right additions, and obviously if there is money to spend there, that they could become a rival. And I don't see us wanting to strengthen a rival. Also, I think we need him. I think, you know, his goal record in the three seasons has been very, very good. Even if Pearson decided he wanted to start with Bent, we still you know, you still need a good range of strikers and different types of strikers. I suppose there's an argument that if Wolves came in with a crazy bid, then you pocket it and you reinvest, and, you know,
8 million is a crazy bid, isn't it? If we bid 8 million, wouldn't that be crazy money?
No, I don't think so.
So you think you can 8 million in this market?
Bristol City were talking about wanting 10 million for your man, their top striker. Yeah. So, you know, he's proven. He's absolutely proven. I mean, Ross McCormack, how much did Ross McCormack just go for? Was it 14?
Yeah, well.
You know, he's a proven goal scorer at this level. So,
you'd be gutted if he left, basically. You would be, you'd be upset.
I wouldn't be happy if he was transferred out for £8 million, and I don't think it will happen. But, you know, stick the bid in and see what happens.
but you rate him. You personally rate him as a player.
Yes.
Yeah.
I rate him reasonably highly. I don't know if he would make the step up to the Premier League, because I think he lacks pace. Yeah. But at the Championship level, he's proven to be extremely effective. I like his technique. He's a great kind of back to goal. Laying in players, sort of on rushing past him, flicking it on. Kind of, he's got really good skill. I think he's a top player. I like his ability to win free kicks when he's blatantly just been touched. But yeah, he's got a lot to offer, and I don't think we'll sign.
No, well, he always scores against Wolves, so I hope we buy him.
So,
Scott, we'll just move on to Brighton now. Obviously, you came very close to promotion last year, and you got a good win on Friday night over Nottingham Forest. Just talk us through your thoughts on Brighton this season. Do you think they're going to be up there again?
I think it's going to be a lot more difficult this year. I mean, looking at it, you'd expect Newcastle to be up there. I know it's not been a great start, but they should be up there by the end of the season. The team's coming down. Norwich have just basically got the same squad, so they'll be well organised. They're always good at this level. And we've lost a little bit of that surprise element. I mean, last season, if you asked a Brighton fan and they said, we'll be two goals away from automatic promotion, you would have thought, Christ, I need sectioning because we were so bad the season before. So, yeah, we've lost that little surprise element. But, I mean, we started very well. Friday night was superb. And as long as we don't sell anyone, especially Anthony Knockhart, I mean, if he goes, we might be in a bit of trouble. We should be there or thereabouts again. It's been a very good start.
Yeah, do you think, are you happy with your squad now as it stands? Because obviously you've got Glenn Murray coming in, and Knockhart looks like he's staying, might even be signing a new contract. Do you think that your squad's now done for the summer, or do you think you need any new additions?
I think we could do with a centre-back, because at the minute we're having to play Bruno there, and he is a right-back, which, although he's done very well at Derby, and he did very well on Friday night, that is a potential disaster waiting to happen. But other than that, if we stick with what we've got, I think the important thing is not to sell, and that's what the club have learnt their lessons before, because whenever we've got in a sort of position to push towards the playoffs, we've then gone and sold the family silver and bought in second-rate replacements, which explains why it all went wrong a few seasons ago. But this time they've turned down bids for Dale Stevens. Obviously the Knockhart bid from Newcastle was rejected. So hopefully just keep everyone together and it could be a very good year, yeah.
And Thomas, we'll just move on to you now. A lot has changed at Wolves this summer. Obviously, new owners, new manager, a lot of new players. What are your views on what has been happening? And are you confident for the season?
Well, it's that's a difficult question to answer, if I'm being entirely honest. It's completely, obviously, bonkers. We went through the whole summer of nothing happening. You thought, is this real? Because we ended last season with a completely ripped apart squad, boring the pants off everyone. Nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. All of a sudden, overnight, we're bought out by this billionaire Chinese conglomerate. The manager's gone. The chairman, the CEO, they wiped out the whole back room. They've started bringing in players from Benfica. We're linked with every player under the sun. We appoint Walter Zenger, which is probably the most left field management recruitment you'll see this season or any of the next seasons in the Championship. And yeah, it's just gone completely bonkers. I think what's been quite good the last few weeks is things have settled down a bit since the football's actually started. And the results have been pretty good. We were 2-0 down away at Rotherham after about 25 minutes. I was there and I was, you know, head in hands. Oh, what's going on here? This is going to be disastrous. We've got, you know, dodgy owners and a dodgy manager. And it's just going to be back to like it was when we had Solbakken and as manager, and we're going to be down the bottom and struggling. But then, you know, like a light switch, suddenly we got back to 2-2 and we should have won that game. And then we won in the League Cup, and then we beat Reading without breaking sweat yesterday. And the new players that have come in, we've had Bod Varson, Icelandic forward, who was part of the team that beat England in the Euros. And he looks an absolute top quality Championship centre forward, big and strong, kind of how Ollie was talking about Chris Martin. Purpose built for the Championship. He scored at Rotherham and he looks a brilliant acquisition. We've had Tex Shearer signed from Benfica on loan for the season, and apparently a lot of Benfica fans are surprised that we've been able to get him, and he looks a wonderful technician, and we're continually linked with lots of other players. We've got money to spend. You know, that bid did go in for Chris Martin. That's not paper talk. That actually did happen. So I think these guys are serious about spending money and adding to the team. And we do need that because we've regressed badly over the last year and a half. But every result between now and the end of August, I kind of see as a bonus, because I'm just hoping that we'll get these 3 to 4 new bodies in that will supplement what we have and turn us in from mid-table, you know, plodders up to hopefully challenging the top six. But it's a tough league, so I have absolutely no expectations about what might or might not happen, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, when I heard about the news of the takeover, I looked into the company that bought them, and I thought that maybe it was a bit too late in the day for them to challenge for promotion this season, where it happens so late and it takes a long time to get players adjusted to a system and to get them into the club. But obviously a good start shows that might not be the case. Do you have any concerns about Jorge Mendes's role at the club? Because he's apparently had quite influential over transfers and things.
Yeah, well, I mean... I don't know really, because it could be brilliant and it could be awful. Because part of me, the first, when we signed these, we got these three players from Benfica and they've all been playing for Benfica B. And it kind of felt like they're Jorge Mendes clients and he was just looking for somewhere to park them. And you were thinking, this has got disaster in all over it. But actually, they look like good players. So that changes your perspective on it immediately. And when they're playing well, you think, actually, we've got access to players that probably a lot of championship teams might not actually be able to get. And that's quite good. And we're linked with a player, Talisca, who has been in the Benfica first team. And he's looking for a move to England. And there's rumours that might be happening before the end of the transfer window. He's a player Liverpool and Chelsea wanted, to put it into context. There seems to be a lot of heat around that story, like it might happen. So it's quite exciting to think that being linked with someone like Mendes, if we get the benefits, then that could be very exciting. So at the moment, I'd say I'm leaning more towards being excited than worried. But again, you've just got to see what actually pans out. But certainly the players that have come in, Bodvarsson up front and Teixeira, and Costa as well, the winger who's only played a few minutes here and there. They all look like decent players. And we've got a lot of workhorses in our team from last season. And what we needed was a few better technicians and attacking players. And I think we've got them now. So I'm feeling more optimistic than I was probably 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the Talisca deal is a very interesting one because it looks like it could be up for upwards of £20 million, which would just be crazy for a championship club. Even Newcastle aren't spending that sort of money, so that would be a huge deal if it did go through. I'll just touch on Newcastle though now, even though I'd rather not. Obviously, we've lost our first two games, and it's not looking good. Despite all the pre-season optimism that was at the club, Saturday against Huddersfield, I was slightly worried about the game because I thought they played counter-attack and they've got a good manager in Wagner, and I thought that they would cause us a lot of problems, and they did. It happened exactly how I feared it would happen. We had most of the ball. I think we had over 58% possession and we just couldn't break them down. It was really, really disappointing. Mohamed Diame came in. He made his debut. He didn't do much. Shelby came in. He again didn't do much. And it was just exactly like it was against Fulham. We couldn't break them down. We had to rely on a penalty to get our goal. And even then, we missed that to try and make that even harder for ourselves. And then we were pushing on for the winner. And they went and got it. So, yeah, it was massively disappointing. And there is just a lot of problems at Newcastle at the moment. Right now, we don't look like promotion contenders. There's too many sort of weak links in our first 11. We have Vernon Anita playing at right wing. And he is not a right winger. That is exactly why we were going in for knockout earlier in the window, because that's a massive gap in our team. And without a proper right winger, I think we're going to struggle to break teams down, and that's been the case. Another problem in our team is that Jamal Lascelles, we've given him the captaincy, which at the time I was all for, but since then he's made two big mistakes in our first two matches. And the problem with giving him the armband is he is now undroppable, seemingly. So that is a problem going forwards, because he's a great leader. He's done a lot for the club off the field. But if he's not performing on the pitch, he shouldn't have the captaincy. He should be on the bench. We should give it to someone who will perform on a week-in, week-out basis. I think we will strengthen still. I think Brendan Galloway is supposed to be coming in at left-back from Everton this week. So that would be good, because Paul Dummett is a weak link. We've been linked with Forestieri, who didn't travel to Norwich at the weekend. I don't see that deal happening. I think it's a bit like the knockout deal, where they are a promotion rival as well and they won't want to sell to us. and there's no need for them to sell. Even if he's refusing to play, they can sort of sort that out. I don't know why I'd want to leave Sheffield Wednesday. He's got a very good thing going on over there. So I think it's early doors. I think we're getting used to the league, but on Wednesday we need to beat Reading. Otherwise, it's going to be panic stations, and people might even start turning on Benitez, which is crazy. But the Newcastle fans are quite fickle, and if it's not going well, if we lose our first three games, then it could get to panic stations. But we'll just move into the topics for today. I just want to know what your guys' thoughts are on the competition over the first 2 weeks. Have any teams surprised you at all, or is it exactly how you expected it to go down?
I think when you look at the teams, it's still obviously very early, but you look at the teams who've got two wins and you look at the teams who've got two defeats, and then you sort of make your conclusions for that. I'm quite surprised Bristol City have had a good start, but then their fixtures have been quite favourable. And I just wonder, they look like a team who are having a go now off the field, bringing in some players. They've got a lad on loan from Chelsea. I think they look quite good. But I think Wolves have sampled some of the lesser teams who I think might have a poor season. I don't think Rotherham are very good. They somehow got 2-0 up against us after a quick start. But that was a headed goal from a set piece and a long ranger. And they looked poor as the game went on for me. I think they'll be at the bottom, which isn't obviously a surprise, but I think they'll struggle. They got tonked by Villa yesterday. And then Reading yesterday, I mean, Reading were very poor. And I look at Reading and how they tried to play yesterday at Molineux, play out from the back. And they patently don't have the players to do that. And it just reminds me of when Wolves got Stolasol backing in, and they tried to play that way and it just didn't work. Ended in disaster. So, I think down the bottom, I think it'll be the teams you think. I think it'll be Burton and Rotherham. I think both of those teams will struggle. And at the top, I still think it'll be the usual suspects, but then maybe Bristol City, I think, could be a dark horse.
I really think Huddersfield could have a very surprising season. We played them at the end of last season. I think it was like February time at the Amex. And you could tell what the new manager was trying to do. It's like Jurgen Klopp light a bit, you know, pressing all the time, get the ball back. And bearing in mind, he'd come in and he was using the old players for that. They still look pretty good. And he had a summer to bring in his own men, sort himself out, get him used to the way he wants to play. And they've obviously made a flying start to things.
Yeah, they have as well. They've got they've completely overhauled their squad over the summer, haven't they?
I think they've largely gone for sort of German players, which obviously is probably the best way to work that sort of system. Because there's not really any other team in the division who plays like that, I don't think, pressing so high and, you know, running around like that.
Yeah. I think can they sustain it over a season though? That's the kind of thing. With a team like that who are playing kind of experimental way, they tend to fade. Because, I mean, Wolves, as I keep going back to when we had Solbakken and as manager, he tried to play a sort of continental way. And it worked in the early months. And then we petered out. And then we couldn't get a result for the rest of the season. We got relegated. So I completely agree that they look a good outfit right now. But I just wonder whether they'll be able to sustain what they're doing. But, yeah, definitely want to keep an eye on.
I do think that you're quite right as well about Bristol City, because remember when they came up, they were trying to chuck money at it, spend loads of money, but obviously players from the top end of the Championship don't really want to drop down to a newly promoted team, because you just never know how it's going to go. Whereas now they've got a season under their belts, they've sort of sorted themselves out once Cottrell went, and it's obviously a club on the up with all the redevelopment going on there as well, so they might be another one of the old dark horses.
Yeah, I think what I've noticed about the division over the first few weeks is that there's so many different styles in the league, which wasn't the case when we were in the league 6 or 7 years ago. You've got, you know, Wagner at Huddersfield, who plays the sort of Jurgen Klopp type of football. You've got Mick McCarthy, who is just a traditional Championship manager. You know exactly what you're going to get when you play Ipswich. And then you've got sort of like managers who've managed at the very top, sort of like Benitez and Di Matteo, and they're going to bring sort of a Premier League sort of style to the league. And I think we found that out in the early couple of games, that the Premier League style that we're playing is what we were playing when we were trying to avoid relegation in the Premier League. So now we're expected to win games. It's not working in the Championship. We just can't break those teams down. And I think the different styles sort of make the Championship so interesting this year. And it's something I haven't really realised over the last few years. that's maybe because I wasn't in the league and I wasn't really following it as closely. I think they're good points of Bristol City and Huddersfield. I think they're two teams that could be in the running for a playoff spot. It's very early, but Bristol City have made some good signings. They've got Tomlin, Tammy Abraham, who they've got on loan from Chelsea, looks a very good player. And I just like the recruitment they're doing. And I think Lee Johnson is a manager on the up. And he's somebody who could go sort of like become the next Eddie Howe, sort of going up into the Premier League and sort of overachieving. I think he's sort of in that sort of at that standard. He's a very exciting coach, so I think they could surprise a few this season. Ollie, do you have any views on the competition this season? Has anyone surprised you? Are you confident about Derby finishing the top six?
I thought you guys' analysis was really good. There's a few points I probably would make. No one mentioned Villa, or I don't think so. A lot of people in the sort of pre-season obviously were sort of, taking the mickey out of Villa, really, because it turned out for them last season. And a lot of people were saying to me anyway, they could even go down again. But I don't see that at all. I think that's the parachute payment system is kind of partly set up to prevent things like that from happening anyway. And since they sort of brought in Chester as well as the other centre back as well from Bournemouth, so they've not fallen into what I call the Fulham trap of just spending a load of money on Ross McCormack but forgetting to buy any defenders. Well, they bought Ross McCormack, but then they also bought some defenders as well. So I think they'll be okay. They could, although people were telling me they thought they'd be struggling, I think they'll probably be towards the top where they should be on their economic kind of status. And then on the other end, obviously Blackburn have been pretty farcical so far. I did a pre-season sort of predictions post. I'm sure you guys probably did the same. And I predicted they'd struggle. But, at this rate, he's going to be sat before the end of the window, isn't he? Rather than, they normally say, he'll be sat by Christmas. But I don't even know if he's going to make it until September at this rate. So they look like they're really struggling.
Yeah, I think that's some good points on Villa. I think the only problem I have with Villa is their new owner. I think he could be a potential sort of like destructive influence. He seems to be getting too involved, criticising the players on social media and things. I think that could go south very quickly, as we've seen in the past with owners like Chilino and things. I think he could have a destructive influence, but it's a good point. They have recruited very well, and they've been linked with Abel Hernandez from Hull. And if they managed to get him in as well, they'd have a very good strike force. They've got Tommy Elphick at the back, like you said, with Chester. They've got a very good team, so I think they're definitely going to be one that is up there.
There's owners seem to be getting more and more colourful, shall we say, as in the modern game. And Dr. Gia is a fine addition to the list of interesting Championship owners. Some of the owners seem to like they seem to really enjoy the attention of being the status of being the owner of a football club. But I don't want to, I don't want to take the mickey out of Forest too much, but their owner, really, I don't. Their owner, Fawaz Al-Hazawi, when he came in, he got really into the Twitter. And I think that it's almost like that's a bit of a sort of, it's going down the rabbit hole, isn't it? When you start, discussing everything you're doing at the club with any of the fans who happen to be on Twitter, at whatever time of day and no matter how many drinks they might have taken. And, and our owner, had what was generally seen as quite a strange decision last season to fire Paul Clement within 6 months of hiring him. And, he was the next, the coming man, or so everybody thought, and then he was gone within 6 months. So, the Championship's, it's got lots of subplots, and some of the guys who own the clubs, the custodians of the clubs, are very interesting characters. Just on Forestieri, if I can say, because I know you said that you didn't think he'd move. I think he will. I think he'll probably join Newcastle, but I might be wrong. I mean, I just that probably... Probably the money that he perceives will be on offer at Newcastle, I would imagine, would be much better than what he's on now. And it just seems like he's decided that he wants to chase the money. And I think Newcastle would be wise to take him. He did very, very well last season. I think the way he's behaved is appalling, but money talks these days. And it's obvious that he's decided that the money that he probably would be able to get if he joined Newcastle is tempting enough that he's decided to down tools. It's shocking. But I'm sure Newcastle will take him, and I'm sure that he will do very well there. I don't really see a way back for him at Wednesday, and I don't think the fans would be terribly pleased to see him trotting out again after he's behaved in the way he's behaved. I just don't see a way back for him at Sheffield Wednesday, and that's the situation that he's engineered for himself. So player power, isn't it? And it's not very impressive, but that's the way of the world these days, it would appear.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to move personally. I think Sheffield Wednesday are going to dig their heels in and sort of keep him at the club, which is going to be, you know, interesting to see how they manage to do that, because obviously it could be a problem going forwards, because it could have a negative effect on the rest of the squad. I think we're seeing that at Newcastle at the moment with Moussa Sissoko. He was getting booed at the game yesterday. He was in the stands and there was chants being directed at him, and it's not a healthy atmosphere to have. So see how Wednesday deal with that. The Newcastle interest in itself, I'm not sure how concrete it is. There's a lot of sort of Sheffield journalists tweeting about 12 million bids, but we haven't decided whether to take him or not yet. You don't know who to believe in the transfer window, what is going on. But if Newcastle are interested, I can definitely see why he wants to move, because obviously the money, and although we started badly, we're going to be in the promotion picture come the end of the season, I'd imagine. I can't see us finishing out the top six at least. So, you know, I can see why he'd want the move. For Newcastle as a team, I don't know where exactly he'd fit in, because we've got a lot of small strikers at the moment. And I think our problem at the moment is we've got a lot of small attackers, and we're playing long ball and we're trying to get in behind defences. But we need to go into the market for a target man sort of striker to cover for when Alexander Mitrovic is out, which is probably going to be often because he gets sent off all the time, and he's currently sort of out because of a four-match suspension. So we need a taller striker. But if we do get Forestieri, I know I would take it. He'd guarantee goals. He's a very good player. So that is definitely one that I'd want to happen. But I'm not as convinced as you that he's definitely going to come to Newcastle. I'm not that convinced yet.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Moving on to player watch for today. Obviously, we all had a fixture at the weekend. Which player impressed you most in your recent fixture, and who disappointed? We'll start with you, Thomas, and Wolves game against Reading. Who impressed and who disappointed?
Well, the two players who impressed, the two I touched upon earlier, are Bodvarsson, the big forward up front. Looks a really good player, holds the ball up, lays in others, but also capable of turning and running in behind as well. I was talking to my dad about him while watching the game, and my dad's very dry. And he was like, well, yeah, he's a target man with a bit of pace. I was like, well, that's pretty good. You know, if you can combine those two things in the Championship, you've got a good player. So I'm very impressed with him. And then I'll pick another one in Teixeira, who played in just behind him, and he was just slipping in passes and just adding that bit of quality that makes a player stand out in the Championship. He looked a great player. Who disappointed? I honestly, from yesterday's performance, I can't pick any Wolves player out, because we were pretty dominant, and front to back we were on top the whole game. So I can't really stand out, pick anyone. We've got Joe Mason up front, the guy we signed from Cardiff last year. He scored, but he did waste a couple of really gilt-edged chances. So I think possibly before the transfer window's out, we need to look at improving our options up front. So possibly him, but I wouldn't say disappointed, because he did all right yesterday, but we need to be more ruthless in front of goal, I think. And a striker is first order of business.
Yeah, we'll just move on to you now, Scott. Which player impressed and which player disappointed in your most recent fixture?
Lewis Dunk was very impressive. He had to go in goal at the end as well against Forest when David Stockdale took a bit of a whack on the knee from his own player. That was a gay tan bong. And bear in mind, he's the only fit centre that we've got, as I touched on a bit earlier. He's had to step up to the plate a bit. And last season, he's obviously a very good young player, but last season he was sort of had the odd cock-up well and truly in him, and he'd make maybe one a month, which would cost us a goal. Thankfully, we were reasonably good last year, so it didn't really matter as much. But the way he started the season, when you can see he's another player who we've had clubs sniffing around of, West Brom putting a bid of £8 million for him. The way he's going on with the sort of the English premium you pay for a young English player now, you could easily justify him having a 14, 15 million price tag in the crazy market we live in these days.
Yeah, you know, Ollie, your game at Barnsley, did you have any thoughts about who impressed and disappointed? And maybe it was like the opposite of Thomas, where you can think of loads that disappointed and maybe not many that impressed.
Yeah, exactly. When I got your list of questions and it said, I made a little note, it basically just said impressed nobody, disappointed everybody. It was a team failure, basically. Honestly, there wasn't a single player from yesterday that you could pick out and say he played well. Unfortunately, it was a frustrating performance. I mean, you spoke, Jake, about the way that Newcastle had a lot of the ball but couldn't penetrate Huddersfield, and you'll find that a lot this season, I'm sure, and we've had it in the last couple of seasons. And it was another game like that where we dominated possession. I think we had 62% possession, actually, but it's irrelevant because we didn't actually create more chances than them. You know, they had a lot less ball but a lot more threat actually on the counter. So I could bore you rigid going through 1 to 11 and explaining why I was annoyed with them all, but I won't. I was disappointed for Will Hughes more than anything, because Pearson's left him on the bench for the first couple of games of the season, and sort of Championship watchers might be a bit surprised by that, because obviously Hughes is very highly rated and regularly linked with a move to massive clubs, and we've had to allegedly, if the tabloids sort of fight off interest from Liverpool, Pearson's leaving him out, but after 8 minutes of yesterday's game, Jeff Hendrick was injured, had to come off, and Will went on. And so I sort of thought, this is his chance, to really sort of, stamp himself on the game and, show Pearson why it was, the wrong call to leave him out, and that really, he should be building the team around Will Hughes, which I think he should be, because I think Hughes is one of the most gifted players. Definitely one of the most gifted players in the Championship. But, it just didn't happen for him. I mean, he played his usual, lovely-looking passes and stuff, but the balance of the team wasn't quite right. I could go on, but effectively, shocking is not a bad word for it. It was a shocking team performance yesterday, so nobody was impressive.
Yeah, you touched on Will Hughes there quite a bit. What do you have any idea why Nigel Pearson maybe doesn't like him? Because he's a player that's been highly rated for years now, and I thought that this year he'd be sort of like the fulcrum of that Derby midfield, and that hasn't been the case. Do you have any idea why he hasn't really been fancied by Pearson or not?
We've played this 4-3-3 formation, and Hughes would be one of the two midfielders with license to go forward. But he's changed it to a more regimented 4-4-1-1. And he obviously, from his Leicester days, and it's not really a surprise, he likes, I think he just like, he likes runners more than anything. He's talked a lot about how he likes pace. He wants to get pace into the team, which I think is why he dropped Martin, put Bent in instead, and had Ince floating around. But it worries. It is one thing that worries me, because it might be just me being a daft fan, but I just think that Hughes is our best player, and that therefore we should not make allowances for players, because if players are not in form or they're not performing, then they do need to be dropped. No one's undroppable, but I think we need to. When you've got a player that talented, I think you need to give him the platform to express himself, and I think he's such an important part of our. Of what has made Derby good in the last 3 years, and what's made us actually quite special, and I think people of neutrals have quite enjoyed watching us when it's clicked for us. And without him, and without George Thorne, who's another really important player for us, I think we've looked a little bit plain, to be honest. So I am worried about that. I'm worried about how Pearson sees his team shape and why Hughes hasn't been picked. He's picked Jeff Hendrick, who obviously had a very good tournament at the Euros for Ireland, did really well, and I think caught a lot of people's eye. So I know he caught Burnley's eye because they made some ridiculously low ball offers for him. Craig Bryson is another midfielder that people who know the Championship will know is a very, very good performer at Championship level. He's got bundles of energy, and he's incredibly hard working and actually also reasonably technically good midfielder as well. So we're kind of blessed with options in midfield, which is another reason why I was a bit surprised that Pearson changed to 4-4-2, because we've got so many good central midfielders. It makes it almost impossible to fit them all in. So we'll see.
Yeah, just moving on to the Newcastle game now. It's a pretty similar story to Ollie, if I'm honest. There's not many that impressed in that game. I guess you could sort of take a few positives as you can from any defeat. Dwight Gayle got his first goal, which is pleasing because it's always important to get that first goal, especially if you're a striker. So even though he missed the penalty, he got the goal, and that's all that matters. And he can sort of take a bit of confidence from that. Matt Ritchie, he sort of turned the game when he came on. He didn't start the game because he had a slight knock beforehand. And when he came on at half time, we just became a lot more threatening attacking, and we were dominating the game more. We were creating more sort of gilt edge chances, and that is what we need to do in the next few games. So I think hopefully his knock isn't too serious, so that he can come straight back into the starting 11 for the next game, because I think he's going to be a very good player this year. I think he has all the quality to do well in the Championship. He's done it before with Bournemouth, so I think he's part of the solution. As opposed to us not breaking teams down, he's part of that solution, and he's going to be a major part, play a major part for us this season. As for disappointed, there's quite a few. Matt Sells, our new goalkeeper, I'm not overly convinced by him yet. We've got three other very good goalies at the club in Tim Krul, Carl Darlow and Rob Elliott. And I think at the moment, I'd rather see any of the other three starting, purely because they're experienced in English football. They've all played in the Championship before. And I think we need somebody who has that experience, especially at the start. And even more so now we've had a poor sort of couple of losses to open up the season. So I think I'd quite like a goalkeeper change going forward. I don't know if he'll do it because it might damage his confidence a bit, but that's what I would do. Vernon Anita was very poor, but he's been played out of position, so you can sort of excuse him for that. And our defence, I touched on it earlier, Jamal Lascelles didn't play very well. He made another mistake. Paul Dummett, again, didn't look very good, and he's been targeted by Burnley as well, so I'm hoping there's something in that, and he can sort of be taken away. We can bring in Galloway, as has been rumoured, and he can play that role, because we just look so unbalanced at the moment. Our right wing, we have Daryl Yamat, who likes to go forward, and on the left, we've got Paul Dummett, who can't really do that, and he defensively, he's not great either, so I don't know what he brings to the team. So there's been quite a few disappointing players for Newcastle. Finally, before we wrap up, we'll each give a brief preview of our midweek games. We'll start with you, Ollie. You've got a trip to Preston North End. How are you feeling about that one? And have you got a score prediction?
I'm really glad we've got a game on Tuesday, actually. It would have been a long week otherwise of just feeling really grumpy. So hopefully we don't double down. And hopefully it's just gets that out of the system quickly. Any sort of result will be fine. But it's hard when you're a club who have expectations and ambitions where you can't help yourself. You look at certain fixtures and you go, "Oh, we should win this one." And I know there was a vibe around the ground at Oakwell yesterday. Oh, we should win here. So I think there'll have to be changes to the team after what happened yesterday. There's no way you could. Well, I mean, Bent, I think, was injured anyway. Hendrick was certainly injured. So there'll have to be enforced changes. I think there would have been changes anyway. I expect Martin to start up front instead of Bent. I expect Johnny Russell to come into the team, who hasn't started yet, but looked pretty bright when he came on as a sub. So it's certainly a case of sort of back to the drawing board, really, for Nigel Pearson. I expect changes. We're still sort of sussing out how he's going to address it. He's obviously come in and decided he's going to start with the 4-4-1-1. Will he stick with that? Will he not? I've got a feeling he probably will, but hopefully he'll be able to sort of, you know, shuffle the personnel a bit and find an 11 that works. So I'll go for a 1-0 derby. Horrible, nasty, scrappy, miserable game, but just you know, win. And that's all that matters, really, and get this season started.
Yeah, and next up we'll come to you, Thomas. Wolves have got a home game against Ipswich. How are you feeling about this one, and do you think you're going to win?
Well, I feel optimistic after Saturday because we wiped the floor with a Reading team who just didn't look at the races. So off the back of that, I feel confident. But then it's Mick McCarthy rolling into town, a manager we know well, of course. And we know how Mick McCarthy likes to set his teams up. And I expect what you would expect from Ipswich on Tuesday, which is to come and dig in, be very compact, very difficult to beat. And that's kind of how we played against Reading. But we were very effective with the ball as well. So we're going to be fighting fire with fire. I don't think it's going to be a game for the purists. But I think we've got enough to stand toe-to-toe with them. Whether or not we've got enough to beat them and win, it almost seems too good to be true at the moment because we've sort of got this mixed bag of a team that we can be consistent and keep winning. But I think I'll probably sit on the fence and probably go for a 1-1, which wouldn't be a bad result. I'd have taken that if you'd asked me at the start of the season. 5 points from the first three league games, undefeated. And as I say, every result in this first month is a bonus for me because I think my hope is that it'll be when the transfer window closes, we might go right up to the wire with building our squad, and then we'll see where we are at the start of September and whether we've got the personnel in the squad to be able to do more than just to be competitive, you know, to get up and challenge some of those really established teams.
Yeah, and just moving on to you now for your match preview. Brighton host Rotherham this week. How confident are you about the fixture and how do you see that going down?
That's the sort of game where if we want to go up, we've got to win it, basically. It's a must-win game against a team that, as everyone has basically suggested, are going to struggle this season. It's the sort of game in the past where we would be likely to mess it up, but I think the sort of the ruthless streak we developed, particularly after Knockhart signed in January, we should be winning a game like that. And if we do, that's 7 points on the game. Win at home, draw away. That's all you got to do to get out of this league. And hopefully, having learned our lesson last time around, where we basically, with batter teams, but not getting enough goals on the board, missed countless chances. And at the end of the day, we were two goals away from promotion. If we can, at risk of standing cocky and a little bit confident, hopefully it could be a game to boost the goal difference. I know I said that we'll probably lose 1-0.
Yeah, and we'll just I'll just preview Newcastle's game now. We've got a home game against Reading, and after hearing what Thomas said about them earlier, I'm more confident than I was before we started the podcast. So I'm hoping that we can get a win there. I think Moussa Sissoko is likely to play a part, even if he doesn't really want to play for us anymore. I think Benitez has given him an opportunity to try and find a move, and he hasn't found one. So I think he's going to be back in. Whether he's going to be from the start or from the bench, I'm not sure. I think Richie will be back in from the start. And I hope it's going to be a more balanced Newcastle side. And I think, you know, we've lost our first two now, and hopefully it's hit home how tough this league is, and they're going to step up and be counted. Because we have some very good players. Obviously, we're missing Mitrovic up front, and we're missing that physical presence, which is disappointing. Because I think he would have really helped in both of our games so far. But I think we're going to get a win. I think we're going to finally kick off our campaign with a win, and I think we're going to start putting a string of results together. I mean, everyone's going to lose two games on the spin at some point during the season. It's just happened to us very early, and I'm hoping it doesn't happen too many more times as the season progresses, because obviously that's it's quite a damaging thing for a team to lose two on the spin. And if it gets any worse than that, then I'm going to start to worry a lot more. But I think we're going to win. I think it's going to be not going to be a great game. I think it's going to be scrappy. I think we're going to struggle to break Reading down, but I think we're going to nick a goal, and I think we're going to win it 1-0. So I'll go 1-0, and then we can take that into the Bristol City game next weekend. So yeah, I'll go 1-0. And with that, we are now out of time. So thanks so much for coming on today, guys. If you'd just like to tell people where they can reach you or any projects you're involved in, now would be a good time.
All right, thanks. Cheers for asking me to take part. And yeah, it's at Derby County Blog on Twitter, or the full website is just www.derbycountyblog.com.
Yeah, so check out wearebrighton.com is our website, which is full of quite a lot of Brighton and Hove Albion nonsense, as well as stuff to do with the Championship. We're on Facebook, that's We Are Brighton, and the Twitter feed is at We Are Brighton as well.
The place to reach me is on wolvesblog.com, very easy to remember that one. And you can tweet me at wolvesblog, again, very easy to remember. I run that account. I've got my own Twitter account, but I won't explain that because I've got a very complicated surname to spell. But yeah, so I'm doing the editing of wolvesblog, so there's plenty of content there, so come check us out. And when we're playing your team, let's have some debate, and look forward to hearing from you. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you could get me on Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's. And I write for loads of sites. I write for EPL Index, The Boot Room, Newcastle 360, Total Dutch Football. Literally all I do is write. So if you follow me over there, I'll plug anything that I do. And thanks so much for tuning into the Championship Roundtable this week, guys. If you want to reach us at the show, you can do so by emailing us at championshiproundtable@gmail.com. And we hope you're joining us again soon.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.